Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Exchange Server 2007 Deployment and Migration Strategies. Let's start this session by going into more detail on what we'll be covering. During this session, we will talk about installation and deployment of Exchange Server 2007. We'll start with a look at various deployment scenarios. Then, as Exchange Server supports role-based deployments, we'll take a look at server roles. We'll run through detailed pre-installation requirements in terms of the supporting infrastructure, software, hardware, and security. Next, after outlining the installation process, we'll run through a few demonstrations. Finally, we'll look at how to automate server deployments using the unattended setup commands and Windows PowerShell scripts to provision servers following deployment. We'll finish the session with another demonstration. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Next is a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential, for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. In the first part of the session, we'll focus on a number of Exchange Server deployment scenarios. Next, we'll discuss server roles. Moving on, we'll run through the pre-installation checklist. Then, we'll perform a graphical installation. Finally, we'll outline the automated deployment options and complete the session with further demonstrations using command line deployments and provisioning scripts. In this first part of the session, we're going to take a look at some deployment scenarios, ranging from greenfield installations to migrations and coexistence scenarios. It's important to understand what installation, migration, upgrade, and coexistence options exist for given situations. The easiest deployment scenario is a greenfield site, that is, one in which no messaging infrastructure exists at all. In this situation, you have nothing to coexist with and nothing to migrate or upgrade from. This may not be a realistic scenario, given that it's unlikely an organization has no email at all. That being said, although they might have some investment in IT infrastructure, many small businesses do not have server-side email systems, relying instead on POP pickups from an ISP via a standalone or several standalone Outlook clients. The extent of their global address list is probably a collection of often duplicated Outlook contact records. Nevertheless, these are still greenfield sites in the strictest sense of the word. With a greenfield scenario, you can build your new Exchange Server 2007 organization from scratch without considering existing systems. Simply start the installation process, define the new organization name, and follow the on-screen prompts. With regard to those small businesses, you can easily migrate the mailbox content from their locally stored Outlook PST files to the information store once you have created the necessary mailboxes in Exchange. A number of utilities exist to help in this process. The global address list can also easily be built, again, using migration utilities. For example, using comma delimited files is a good way to get the records across and allows you to manipulate the data midstream, perhaps weeding out the duplicates. Exchange 2007 doesn't support in-place upgrades from earlier versions. This is primarily because of the shift from a 32-bit operating system platform to a 64-bit operating system platform. In addition, Exchange 2007 doesn't support same organization coexistence with Exchange 5.5. This means that to switch to Exchange 2007, you will need to create a new native Exchange 2007 organization and then migrate the information across. Essentially, you will need to move the mailbox content to newly created mailboxes in Exchange 2007. Some attention to detail should be given to the mailbox attributes when moving, as legacy Exchange handles some things quite differently from how Exchange 2007 does. For example, resource mailboxes are now specifically typed in the directory. Exchange 2007 and legacy Exchange will coexist quite happily during the migration, but as two separate and distinct organizations. This presents you with some challenges. For example, you will need to consider how email is to be delivered to the organization when some users have been migrated to the new organization and others have not. Foreign systems, such as Lotus Domino Notes, must be migrated in the same way as we handle migration from Exchange 5.5. We'll come back and discuss coexistence in a moment. You have a couple of options with Exchange 2000 or 2003. You can either go down the same route that we took with 5.5, that is, migrating the mailbox content across to a newly created 2007 organization, or, alternatively, you can start adding new Exchange 2007 servers to the existing 2000-2003 organization, and then move mailboxes between servers in the same organization. Note that you cannot upgrade existing 2000 or 2003 servers, but you can add 2007 server to the organization. Because Exchange 2000 or 2003 supports interoperation with foreign systems such as Lotus Notes, if your current Exchange organization is configured in this way, one possible migration strategy is to start adding 2007 servers to the existing legacy organization and then moving mailboxes to the new servers. This means that while your organization is still mixed, with some 2003, some 2007, and some foreign servers, you are supporting an intra-organizational coexistence. When it comes time to decommission the older servers, you have a number of options. You can either remove all legacy servers and switch the organization to native mode, or you can move most mailboxes to a newly created organization and use your existing messaging infrastructure to provide support for direct foreign system coexistence. Or you can go back to the original plan for moving from foreign systems and perform a mailbox content migration to the new organization. Let's talk a little more about coexistence. As we just saw, there is no need to migrate from your legacy or foreign systems. If your Exchange 2003 organization provides good support for your foreign systems, then continue to operate the necessary servers to support the environment. It's worth pointing out that you can support inter-organization coexistence between 2007 and 2003, and, of course, between multiple 2007 organizations. But before we look at that in more detail, let's touch on forest topologies. If your coexistence or migration strategy involves a native 2007 organization, it's worth discussing the options you have for its creation. Exchange 2007 supports three forest topologies. These are the single forest topology. A single forest topology is the recommended Active Directory configuration. It provides users with the richest feature set and a single global address list, or GAL. Because of its simplicity, it's straightforward to administer and requires no provisioning or synchronization with other organizations. Next, we have the multiple forest topology. A multiple forest topology exists when you install Exchange Server into an Active Directory environment that consists of several distinct forests. A number of situations require multiple forests, including the following. Your organization has several distinct business units that require data and service isolation. Your organization has several distinct business units that require separate schemas. You anticipate a merger or acquisition. Because you install Exchange Server into both forests, multiple Exchange Server organizations exist, each with its own GAL. This is the typical topology for use when coexisting or migrating. Finally, there's the resourced forest topology. A typical reason for using a resource forest topology is that you need to separate Active Directory objects from Exchange Server objects. When you implement a resource forest configuration, you install Exchange Server into only one forest. This action results in a single GAL for your organization, but it also separates Exchange Server and Active Directory objects. However, this topology introduces some complexities because a degree of provisioning must occur between the forests. That is, when you create a user in one forest, a process must exist to create a mailbox object in the other. Now let's look at issues that arise out of coexistence. To support integration with a legacy organization, that organization must be in Exchange native mode, which means it must not contain any Exchange 5.x servers, only 2000 or 2003 servers. As you deploy new 2007 servers, they will be added to both their own administrative group, called Exchange Administrative Group, followed by a random identifier in brackets, and their own routing group, called Exchange Routing Group, with a random ID in brackets. If you are using the new Exchange Management Console, then legacy mailboxes are displayed. To ensure proper messaging functionality, you will need to create a routing group connector between the legacy routing groups and this automatically created routing group. In mixed environments, where you have some legacy Exchange servers running either 2000 or 2003, the Exchange 2007 Client Access Server provides a link to these back-end servers. However, the client experience is Outlook Web Access 2000 or 2003, depending upon the version of Exchange installed on the back-end server. To experience Outlook Web Access 2007, you will need both an Exchange 2007 Client Access Server and an Exchange 2007 Mailbox Server. Note that you cannot use an Exchange 2000X front-end server to connect to an Exchange 2007 Mailbox Server. A number of recipient objects properties are now invalid in 2007. The product group has provided a number of scripted utilities to enable you to determine which recipient properties are no longer valid and what you can do about them. Let's summarize how this interoperation works. In reality, it's more like a side-by-side configuration. If you open a tool like ADSI Edit and look at the objects, you'll see some that are shared between the legacy version of Exchange in 2007, such as the recipient policies, address lists, and other recipient configuration. However, the routing and administrative topologies exist side by side. An important note is that because versioning of these objects has been introduced in 2007, some objects modified on a 2007 server using the Exchange Management Console will no longer be configurable using the older Exchange System Manager. It's true to say that this does make management rather complicated, as there is limited integration at the administrative level. Also, remember that Exchange 2007 doesn't implement routing or administrative groups other than for backwards compatibility with 2000 or 2003. Delegation and separation of administration of Exchange 2007 servers is achieved through Exchange permissions. Routing groups are not implemented, as all routing is direct relay by the most efficient route based on the IP topology. To find out more about administration in Exchange 2007, please see the TechNet session IT Pro EXC 106. You can also find out more about the routing architecture in session IT Pro EXC 110. Let's return to the agenda. Introducing Exchange Server Roles. Exchange Server 2007 supports role-based deployments, and in this second section we'll be discussing the five server roles. First, let's run through the basics. Server roles fall into one of two broad categories. One role is designed to be deployed in the perimeter network, outside the corporate intranet, with no access to Active Directory. The other roles are designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called an Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it is not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs access to the Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, or ADAM, installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the hub transport server. This role can be combined with others where required. The client access server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP, and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does in 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access or message routing, as these are handled by the other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, and access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on the given task. The unified messaging server is new, and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a unified messaging server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange, handles phone calls, and provides answering services as well as voicemail. Next, we'll look at how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Now we'll put the whole thing together and step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives at your organization. The Edge Transport Server sits isolated in the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the Connection Filtering Agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions on the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution, like Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services. Once the message is deemed safe, the Edge passes it along to a hub transport server. Connectors are defined on both the Edge Transport and Hub Transport servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communication between the edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message. Consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions, these rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require that you store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may also have your own internal organizational regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages. The transport agents provided in Exchange, running on the Edge and Hub servers, allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The hub transport server now passes the message to the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from a MAPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through Exchange Active Sync, Outlook Web Access, or Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one that is in the same site as their mailbox server. This can take the form of either a redirection, that is, telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You will also need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the new unified messaging server can link your PBX with your email. If a user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA, and EAS clients provide in-message controls to hear and respond to these voice messages. Let's have a look at the benefits that role-based deployments bring. The main goal of introducing role-based installations was to enable administrators to perform installations more easily. As we just saw, by breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, and access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on the given task. It also runs better because unnecessary components are not installed. Administrators have tried to work around the monolithic installation approach of earlier Exchange versions by tuning a server once it's been deployed. But this has proved time-consuming and not as ideal as it could be. the Exchange product group wanted to achieve a way in which the Exchange front-end server could be installed simply, requiring little in the way of adjusting things once it was installed. Just run setup, choose the client access option, and the rest is done for you. One obvious benefit is that the mantra, only install the services you need, can now be put into practice. If your computer is a front-end server for OWA users, you need to install only the client access server role. By not installing the other unnecessary roles, this server security is enhanced. In addition, you can truly optimize the server to that task or role. Mailbox servers have different jobs to do compared to client access servers or transport servers. In Exchange 2003, it was difficult to optimize a server that was hosting several redundant roles. With Exchange 2007, it just became a whole lot easier. Load balancing can easily be provided by installing multiple servers for a given role, and the mailbox role also supports clustering. Typically, you will need multiple client access servers to support remote clients and clustered mailbox servers to provide high availability of the store processes. Applying server patches and updates can be a disruptive process for your users. If a minor security change is needed for the client access role, in Exchange 2003, you'd have needed to apply the patch to all Exchange servers, regardless of their function in the organization, possibly requiring a server restart. Now you can apply specific role-based patches and updates, which will minimize the impact on your messaging system. The final benefit of using server roles is that, from an administrative perspective, it's more intuitive. You understand what it is that the server does. It stores, it routes, it provides client access. And you can manage that role better. You realize how to optimize, how to plan for high availability of a given role, and the impact of unavailability. Using server roles brings enormous administrative benefits to you. If you need to determine which roles are installed on a given server computer, you can do that by accessing the registry or by looking in Active Directory using ADSI Edit. Take a look in the HKey Local Machine software Microsoft Exchange V8.0 key, and there will be a subkey for each installed role, for example, client access role. Alternatively, look at the Active Directory configuration and the MSEX current server roles value indicates which roles are installed. It's a binary bit mask with the mailbox role in bit position 1, the client access role in position 2, and so on. So a server with an MSEX current server role value of 6 has both the mailbox and client access roles installed. Let's return to the agenda. During this section, we will run through the installation prerequisites for Exchange Server 2007. We'll touch on the hardware, software, security, Active Directory infrastructure, and any other pre-installation requirements. We'll start by outlining the hardware requirements. The most significant change from earlier versions of Exchange Server is that in a production environment, Exchange Server 2007 requires a 64-bit processor. The change from 32-bit to 64-bit gives Exchange Server the ability to support larger capacity servers. For example, an Intel Xeon Pentium 4 64-bit processor or an AMD Opteron 64-bit processor is required in a production environment. 32-bit installations are only recommended for training or testing environments. With regards to memory, although 512 megabytes is the recommended minimum, in busy messaging environments, several gigabytes of memory would be more appropriate. It's difficult to give an exact figure for disk space requirements, as this largely depends on your particular situation. More users storing more email messages means more disk space. 1 gigabyte of free disk space, plus some 200 megabytes of system drive space is required to actually deploy a server. But thereafter, the requirements are very much customer specific. There are no special requirements regarding disk configuration, but clearly a high-performance, fault-tolerant disk subsystem would be highly desirable, depending on the server role being deployed. Whatever disk configuration you opt for, NTFS should be the selected file system, as this provides the greatest capacity and reliability. Let's look at software requirements. The exact software requirements depend on the server role that you install. However, all servers running Exchange Server 2007 also must run a 64-bit edition of Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1 or later. In addition, you must install Microsoft .NET Framework 2.0 and Management Console version 3.0. With Beta 2, you'll be prompted to install these components if they are missing when you attempt to deploy a server. Next, we'll look at role-specific software requirements. We'll be discussing server roles later, but there are 5 of them. Your software requirements will vary depending upon the role that you have selected for deployment. The mailbox role requires Network Comm Plus and the World Wide Web Service from IIS. A client access server requires the World Wide Web Service from IIS to support HTTP clients. In addition, you must enable ASP.NET on client access servers. The unified messaging role requires a component called Speechify, which will install automatically when you deploy the unified messaging role. Finally, both the hub and edge transport roles require a number of IIS components to be installed. Your Active Directory environment and any existing Exchange organization must also meet certain requirements. An appropriately configured Active Directory directory service forest is the primary infrastructure requirement of Exchange Server 2007. The Active Directory preparation takes place automatically with the first server deployment. However, this action requires you to have schema and enterprise admin permissions. Alternatively, you can prepare Active Directory as a separate process before you deploy the first Exchange server. To do this, run setup with the Prepare AD switch. You can also prepare the schema as a separate process, which we will discuss later. Any domain that will host either Exchange services or Exchange users must be operating in Windows 2000 native functional mode or higher, including the forest root. You can make this one-way change with Active Directory users and computers. Because Exchange Server 2007 no longer supports coexistence with Exchange Server 5.5, you must remove all servers running Exchange Server 5.5 and switch the Exchange Server organization to native mode. Finally, any server that will host the Edge transport role must not be part of the Active Directory forest and must be installed as a member of a work group. A couple of other infrastructure-related items to note. It's important to think about upgrading or replacing existing domain controllers and global catalog servers. These servers provide critical services to Exchange, and if they are unable to perform adequately, that will necessarily have a negative impact on the messaging infrastructure. It would make sense to implement 64-bit hardware if you do plan to upgrade or replace these servers, as any organization with more than 20,000 objects will see performance improvements from using 64-bit hardware and operating systems. In addition, Any organization with an Active Directory database in excess of 3 gigabytes in size will benefit from the increased address space that 64-bit platforms bring, assuming there is sufficient physical memory already installed. For example, one 64-bit global catalog server, based on a dual-core CPU with 14 gigabytes of physical memory installed, can handle the workload of 11 32-bit global catalog servers and so supports 20,000 Exchange server mailboxes. Let's take a quick look at some client computer requirements. The exact software requirements depend on the type of client being used. If you want to connect to Exchange using the Microsoft Messaging API, or MAPI, then Microsoft Office Outlook 2007 is the preferred client, although both Outlook 2002 and 2003 are supported. Of course, Outlook Anywhere, or RPC over HTTPS as you may remember it, requires Outlook 2003 or higher. Outlook Web Access is supported over basic authentication from any web browser, although you'd be well advised to implement HTTPS if you intend to use only basic authentication. If you want to use Digest, integrated Windows, or forms-based authentication, you must use Microsoft Internet Explorer, at least version 5 or higher. Mobile devices must be running Windows Mobile 2003 or later to connect to Exchange ActiveSync. Other client protocols are also supported, such as POP and IMAP. Jumping ahead slightly to the server installation process, although Microsoft Office Outlook 2007 is the preferred client, it's worth noting that if you are using the older Outlook clients, you must specify this when you perform the initial installation of Exchange Server. If you do have legacy clients in use, specifying this in the installation process on the server enables things like public folders, which are not required for Outlook 2007. Specifically, calendaring for Outlook 2003 requires some system folders, which are special public folders, to support the publishing of free, busy schedule information, which, in turn, allows users to create appointments with one another. Since this information is made available using a web service for Outlook 2007 clients, public folders are not required for Outlook 2007 users. To perform an installation of Exchange Server, you must log on with sufficient privilege. If the Exchange organization has already been created, you need to log on to the intended Exchange Server as a member of the local administrators group. You will also need server admin permissions in the Exchange organization to add the server to it. In real terms, this probably means logging on as a domain admin and an Exchange admin. Specifically, you need Exchange organization permissions to add new server objects. If the Exchange organization has not yet been created, you will need to perform this task, either during the deployment of the first server or as a separate process prior to the first deployment. We'll look at that process later in today's session. However, to perform this task, you will need permissions to modify the Active Directory schema, which means that you'll need to log on as a member of both the Active Directory schema admins and the Enterprise admins groups. Naturally, this will mean that you are also a member of the local administrators group. Let's return to the agenda. In this section, we'll look at the installation process itself. At the end of the section, we'll run through a demonstration on performing a server deployment using the graphical wizard and then adding a server role from the command line. Before you start any server installation, you'll need to be sure that the server computer meets the minimum hardware requirements, that the operating system and other software requirements are met, that Active Directory and existing Exchange organization requirements are met, and that you have logged onto the server with sufficient privilege to perform the required task. Assuming that all prerequisites, which we discussed earlier, have been met, you insert the product CD and the deployment wizard starts. You can choose between a typical server deployment, which includes the three core roles of mailbox, hub transport, and client access, or you can opt to perform a custom installation. There has been a little confusion over which roles need to be installed to get messaging up and running. With Beta 2, the product group added the typical installation option. This will combine all the roles needed, together with the administrative tools, to get messaging working in an Active Directory site. If you are sure you know what you want, you can choose the custom installation option and specify the components that you want to deploy. Having made your selection, proceed by clicking Next. If you opted for custom installation, now you need to choose the server roles that you want to deploy. Remember that you cannot combine the Edge Transport role with any others. The wizard will dim the remaining roles if you select the Edge role. You can add and remove roles using Add or Remove Programs in Control Panel or from the command line using EX Setup. If this is the first server to be deployed, and you did not prepare Active Directory using the Prepare AD Setup switch, you will be asked to define the organization name now. If the computer you are installing on is part of an Active Directory forest that contains a supported legacy Exchange organization, that is detected automatically, and the computer is joined to that organization. If you have a legacy installation and you want a new Exchange organization, you will need a separate forest, and you will create a multiple forest or resourced forest topology, which we touched on earlier. Built into the deployment wizard is the integrated best practice analyzer. This will perform prerequisite checks prior to attempting to install the selected roles. These checks include organization-specific checks, such as whether Active Directory is in native mode. It also performs role-specific checks, like whether the required software is installed. For example, the client access server needs certain IIS components to function. Assuming all is well, you can proceed with the installation. Otherwise, you're presented with a report as to why installation can't proceed, allowing you to take corrective action. For example, you might be notified that IIS components have not been installed, and although the organizational checks were okay, the role-specific ones have failed. Note that if any of the software prerequisites aren't met, such as the installation of Microsoft .NET Framework version 2.0, then the installation wizard will go to the internet to locate them. Let's summarize the end-to-end installation process. When you run setup, it verifies that the local computer has the prerequisite software installed, Microsoft .NET Framework V2, the Windows PowerShell, and the new Management Console V3. It then copies setup files to a local folder for installation. Next, you should run the Exchange Best Practice Analyzer to make sure that your system is Exchange 2007 ready. This extends far beyond the local computer, but analyzes the Active Directory and any supported existing Exchange organization. For example, a space at the end of an SMTP address is valid in 2003, but invalid in 2007. The EXBPA will pick that up and suggest a script to run to fix the problem. When you're satisfied that everything is okay, you can proceed with the setup wizard. Again, The first thing the wizard does is confirm that everything is ready for 2007 and that all prerequisites have been met. Next, the installation files are unpacked by Windows Installer, which enables support for features like Microsoft Update, Windows Update Services, and so on. Next, the wizard presents the installer with the installation choices screens that we already discussed. Once the installation has completed, when the installer loads the new Exchange Management Console, you are presented with a task list to complete installation. This will include things like running EdgeSync to create the necessary connectors to the internet. Of course, when the installation is complete, it's not a bad idea to use the Exchange Best Practice Analyzer to check the server health, which enables you to verify and optimize the installation. Time for a demonstration. In this demonstration, we'll deploy a new server using the GUI installation routine. We're going to look at adding a new mailbox server to the Northwind Traders Active Directory service forest. We'll do this by running the Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 setup program. We'll open the CD drive, locate the setup.exe program, and double-click it. The Exchange Best Practices Analyzer has checked that the three prerequisites, Microsoft.NET Framework version 2, Windows PowerShell, and Microsoft Management Console version 3 are installed. Next, we'll click the link to install Exchange Server itself. The setup program copies the necessary files to a temporary location on the local hard disk. When the wizard loads the introduction page, we'll click Next. Notice that on the left-hand side of the window, there's the list of steps that we need to perform. It's helpful to know where you are in the process. We'll accept the license agreement, but decline participation in the error reporting program. Anytime an error occurs, the report goes to Microsoft. If enough incidents of that error happen, the problem is fixed. In real-world installations, it's a good idea to enable this feature. However, we don't have an active internet connection, so we'll decline for now. Next, we get the installation type page. You can choose the typical installation, in which the three standard roles combine on this server: mailbox, hub transport, and client access. Alternatively, you can customize setup. We'll choose customize for now and select the roles manually. With the exception of the edge transport role, which you must install on a dedicated server computer, you can select and combine any role or roles that you want. You can also install the management tools. We'll deploy a new mailbox server, but since the organization doesn't have any client access or hub transport servers, we'll select those roles too. The next page asks us whether we want to use public folders. If you have legacy client computers running Outlook 2003 or earlier, they need public folders to provide free, busy information for calendaring. Exchange 2007 and Outlook 2007, or OWA 2007, uses a web service to provide instant free, busy updates. Therefore, if you have no legacy clients, choosing No here will mean that you have no public stores and databases. You can change this later by creating the necessary stores. We'll choose No for now. The Exchange BPA now performs service-specific and role-specific prerequisite checks. You might notice that the BPA is checking for updates to the best practices configuration file. This is handy, as it means it checks against the latest best practices before any new deployments can proceed. Once the server passes the prerequisite checks, we can proceed with the installation. As this can take a little while, we'll switch back to the presentation. But how do you know that the server deployed successfully? Well, you can verify that Exchange installed successfully by using the Windows PowerShell command get Exchange server, which returns a list of Exchange servers and their installed roles. Also, it's worth checking the Event Viewer, specifically the application log, for events 1003 and 1004, which indicate that Exchange services are starting up. Finally, you can open the Exchange Management Console and run the Exchange Best Practice Analyzer to verify your server installation. Time for another demo. In this demonstration, we'll verify our previous server deployment and verify which roles have been installed. In this demonstration, we're going to verify that setup completed correctly following the server installation that we undertook in the last demo. First, let's close the completion window. Now let's close the setup window. The setup program has opened the Exchange Management Console. And this is the Finalized Deployment Tasks window. Listed tasks include Verify Deployment, Configure Domains for which you will accept email, Subscribe to the Edge Transport Server, and others. Which of these you need to run depends upon your organization. We will verify the deployment, but we'll use the Event Viewer and Windows PowerShell to do it. If we open the Event Viewer and locate events with an ID of 1003 or 1004 in the application log, we should be able to verify the installation. We can see several 1003 events. Let's just open one up. Okay, now let's filter for 1004 events. Let's open one up. That seems to indicate that the role installed. Let's try verifying using Windows PowerShell. Let's open Windows PowerShell from the Exchange Server folder. It's a very simple command. We'll use the Get Exchange Server command. We want to format the output, so we'll pipe that to format list and specify that we want the server names and the installed roles. The command returns a list of one server, SMBEX01, and its three installed roles, mailbox, client access, and hub transport. The installation appears to have been successful. Obviously, the Windows PowerShell getExchangeServer command tells us which roles are installed, but we can also verify this through the registry. If we navigate to /hkey/local/machine/software/microsoft/exchange/v8.0, a key will exist for each installed role, including the administration tools. We can see that five keys exist: admin tools, client access role, hub transport role, mailbox role, and setup, indicating that we successfully installed those roles. Let's close the editor and return to the presentation. Let's talk about modifying the installed roles. The exsetup command is used to add or remove roles from servers that have already been deployed. It's also used to deploy clustered mailbox servers. As with setup, the /m switch is used to define the mode of operation, and install again is the default. Roles are defined with /r, and the same role names are used as with setup. Multiple roles are again separated with commas. /dc can be used to specify a domain controller that should be referenced for the installation. Additional switches include /s to specify a source folder for the installation files and a number of switches that install clustering. It's outside the scope of this session to discuss the detailed requirements for establishing CCR, so we won't go into detail on the command switches now. It's great to be able to drop to the command prompt, run a small single-line command, and deploy or remove server roles. The same prerequisite checks are performed as with any other deployment, and then the server is configured. Let's return to the agenda for the last time. In this section, we're going to start with a brief reminder about scripted and automated setups for Exchange 2003. Then we'll run through the command line setup program and look at how to perform basic scripted installations before getting into the Exchange 2007 answer file. We'll wrap up with a demonstration of performing a server deployment from the command line and then using a script to provision the server. So let's remind ourselves all about scripted 2003 deployments. If you have ever worked with Exchange 2003 setup answer files, you'll know that the file is created by the setup program itself when you specify the create unattend switch. The format of the file is somewhat obscure, and one goal for 2007 was to provide a better file format that administrators could edit to their own requirements without needing to run through the setup program to create the file. Also, the actual options the installer could perform through the unattended answer file were limited. For example, you cannot deploy the first server in an Exchange 2003 organization using an answer file, nor can you implement clustered installations, nor does automated setup support mixed mode deployments, that is, those with Exchange 5 servers. There are a number of other restrictions, but the point is that 2007 does away with them. You can perform the same installation and deployment actions using an answer file that you can interactively with the GUI. Another problem was that the setup return codes weren't especially meaningful or helpful, so that issue needed some attention. Exchange 2003 never really gave a convenient way to perform unattended installations. This has changed with Exchange 2007. In 2007, you can open a command prompt and run setup from there. You can now create a simple one-line script or batch file that contains the command to deploy the server that you need. Perhaps the major benefit of performing command line setups, aside from the benefits of unattended setups, is that you can separate the forest preparation from the server deployment. When you run setup using the deployment wizard, if the organization hasn't been prepared yet, it will be done automatically during the server deployment. While that might suit you, especially if you're a single server organization, it might not if you have many servers. Organization preparation involves modifying the schema of Active Directory. Only members of the Schema Admins and Enterprise Admins group can perform this task. In larger organizations, the task of organization preparation is usually performed by a different administrative team than the one that deploys servers. Server deployment requires reduced permissions, domain administrators, and appropriate exchange permissions. Various command line options can be used to customize setup, and we'll review those in a moment, but one switch is the Prepare AD switch. Exchange 2003 provided a similar mechanism, as you could run setup with the Forest Prep switch. However, this was followed by the Domain Prep switch, and then a deployment of the management tools was performed, and then you had to create the admin groups, and so on. In all, it was a confusing setup routine for many customers. Let's take a look at the command line switches. When you run setup from the command line, you can specify the mode of operation with /m. Choose between install, the default, uninstall, recover server, and upgrade. You can define the roles to install using the /r switch. Separate multiple roles with commas. Select H for hub transport, C for client access, E for edge transport, M for mailbox, or U for unified messaging. You can also install only the management tools by using the option T for your server role. If you want to specify a target installation folder, use /t. If you want or need to specify which domain controller will be read from or written to during installation, use the /dc switch. A typical setup command might be setup /r:u,m,h. That would deploy three roles: hub transport, mailbox, and unified messaging to a server. Let's have a look at some special switches used for delegating deployment. Because of the high level of permissions required to deploy a server, local administrator and exchange organizational permissions, you might want to take advantage of these special command line switches. Using the new provision server switch, you can create a placeholder in Active Directory for the server that you are deploying. With the server admin switch, you can define an administrator with full control of the server object. This will enable a low-level administrator to perform the deployment without having organizational permissions. Very useful when you want to do remote deployments. The remove provision server switch allows you to remove the placeholder object before the deployment occurs. Time for another demonstration. In this demonstration, we'll deploy a new server using the command line setup program. In this demonstration, you'll see how to install a server using the command line setup program. This computer already has Microsoft .NET Framework version 2.0, the new management console installed, and ASP.NET installed, so it meets all the prerequisites. Let's start installing the mailbox, client access, and hub transport roles. Open a command prompt, not Windows PowerShell, just a regular command prompt. Switch to the CD-ROM drive root directory and run setup with the /R:M switch to install the mailbox role. As we also want the client access and hub transport roles, we'll specify them with C, H. Then press Enter to start the installation. It will take a few minutes, so we'll leave that running and return to the presentation. Returning to the command line switches for setup, let's focus on the /PrepareX switches for a moment. In 2003, two switches were provided with setup to prepare Active Directory. These were Forest Prep and Domain Prep. In 2007, additional switches are available. As with 2003, these special switches are used to prepare Active Directory for Exchange deployment. Use Prepare AD to prepare the Forest for Exchange deployments. This will carry out all the tasks performed by the other switches. You'll need to run Prepare Domain in domains other than the forest root, but apart from that, all required preparation takes place. However, if you want to separate these configuration changes, you can. The Prepare Legacy Exchange Permissions switch will grant permissions to the Exchange Enterprise server and Exchange Domain Server groups on the new Exchange Info property set. It will not perform the other actions. The primary purpose of the switch is to ensure that the 2003 recipient update service can continue to function. Essentially, the properties required to maintain RUS are moved, and this command assigns the necessary permissions to the new properties. Use the Prepare Schema switch to extend the Active Directory schema. It does not create the necessary security groups in the forest root required to deploy Exchange Server. The option to separate schema updates from other Active Directory forest preparation tasks might be useful for larger organizations that have specific teams responsible for schema changes. Prepare Domain creates the local domain groups and grants permissions to the EDS and EES groups. Once again, it will not prepare the forest or perform other related tasks. You'll need to do this in all domains that contain either Exchange servers or Exchange mailbox enabled user accounts. The benefit of being able to separate these Active Directory preparation tasks is that deployments can be better handled by tiered installation teams with different Active Directory permissions and responsibilities. Note that when you run Prepare AD or Prepare Schema, in both cases, you must be in the same site and same domain as the Schema Operations Master. Let's have a look at the permissions needed to perform these tasks and the precise changes made by each switch to the Active Directory Exchange configuration. To run Prepare Legacy Exchange permissions, you need Active Directory Enterprise Admin permissions. This task locates legacy domains and assigns the necessary permissions to legacy groups. To run the Prepare Schema command, you'll need Active Directory Schema Admin permissions. This task imports LDIF files and extends the Active Directory Schema. This is a one-time operation. To run setup with the Prepare AD switch, you'll need Active Directory Enterprise Admin permissions. This one-time operation creates the top-level config container and the associated Exchange organization. It also creates sub-level config containers that support recipient templates and the email lifecycle folder container. Then it creates the Exchange groups and assigns permissions to them. To run the prepared domain switch, you need only Active Directory domain admin permissions. This switch creates exchange groups in the domain in which you run it and assigns the groups necessary exchange permissions. Well, those are all the basic switches you can use with the setup command. Although you can script installations by using a batch file that contains the relevant setup command, with appropriate switches, it doesn't provide the level of detail and customization of an answer file. So let's look at the Exchange 2007 setup answer file. The old 2003 answer file contains a quite complicated syntax. You wouldn't easily be able to open a previously created file and edit it to your needs. By contrast, the 2007 file looks like a simple text file. You use simple structures, like parameter equals value, and you can edit one you used previously with Notepad. The chances are you won't need the level of detail. It's as easy to use the setup file with the appropriate switches. But there are occasions when this will be handy. For example, deploying clustered configurations using an answer file will make your life easier. But how do you know whether the scripted installation worked? As we saw in 2003, you get some strange messages in the log that seem to indicate there's a problem. The return codes are confusing. So with 2007, return code couldn't be easier. 0 is success, 1 is failure. Simple. The right data also gets sent to the correct log, and it's easy to find the log information. You can even use the get setup log Windows PowerShell command to parse the log. The exchange setup.log is in the exchange setup logs folder of your system drive. Errors and warnings are uniformly annotated, and success-failure messages are unambiguous. Let's summarize all of this. The new setup command is easy to use, with well-documented and powerful command switches and a simplified, well-structured answer file. It can be used in any and all situations. First server install? Supported. Cluster install? Supported. Uninstall, add remove components, recover server, all supported. You can trust setup, and the feedback you get is clear, concise, and unambiguous. You can fully deploy servers, even performing a lights out installation. When setup completes, you use the PowerShell to provision the server, adding mailboxes, stores, storage groups, configuring services, whatever you need. Let's see this all in action. Let's run through another demonstration. In this demonstration, we're going to provision a server using a script that will establish mailboxes, storage groups, and stores. But first, we'll use the Exchange Best Practices Analyzer to verify successful deployment. In this demo, we will use the Best Practices Analyzer, or BPA, to verify server deployment. It's located in the toolbox. Let's go and load it. It takes a moment to load because another MMC console is loading with the BPA snap-in loaded. Let's define the properties of our scan. First, we'll define the domain controller we want to connect to. SMBEX01 is already selected as the domain controller, so let's connect to that. We enter an identifying label and then set the scan to perform a quick health check. That's going to take a few minutes to run. Obviously, a full health check and performance check can take considerably longer. Once the test is completed, we can view a report. We click the link to view the report. We'll select a full issues report. There are several issues. Some are minor and some more serious, as indicated by the warning symbols. Let's look at the backup issue, which includes a recommendation for avoiding the problem. Well, the analyzer tells us that a full backup has never been performed, which is a serious problem in a production system. It's always a good idea to perform regular backup operations. However, it seems that we deployed the server successfully. Let's move on to look at server provisioning. The Exchange Management Shell, based on Windows PowerShell, is perfect for automation and bulk changes in the Exchange environment. In this demonstration, we will use a script, essentially a series of commands, that will provision a server. The script will create user accounts, create storage groups and stores, and create mailboxes for the newly created users on the new stores. All automatically and without user intervention. We'll just open the script in Notepad so that we can see the various commands. First, the script creates some storage groups, and then it creates mailbox databases. Then the script calls another script, called new user, which in turn creates the user accounts. Values are passed to the new user script. The enable mailbox command is used to create mailboxes for the new user accounts on the mailbox database. The database is defined using the hyphen database parameter. The new storage group command is used to create the new storage groups, while the new mailbox database command creates databases within these storage groups. You can appreciate how rapidly you can provision a server with so few lines of script compared to writing this in Visual Basic and using several APIs. We're using an external file, newuser.csv, and accessing its content using the import CSV command. We pipe the result to the provisioning script for action. Let's use the management console to see how that worked. We're looking for mailboxes for Dan P, Jessica A, and some others. We'll switch to the recipient configuration work center and verify the new user accounts. Next, let's look at the stores and storage groups. We can see the newly created stores, so following the command line installation, we run a quick script to complete the deployment process. Let's return to the presentation for a session summary. Let's run through a summary of today's session. We started today's session by outlining the various scenarios into which you might deploy Exchange Server 2007. We saw how easy it is to support legacy environments, foreign systems, and to either migrate from or coexist with those legacy and foreign systems. We talked about server roles and how you can deploy just the services you need by implementing server roles: mailbox, client access, hub transport. If you want to keep it simple, choose typical. If you want to customize things, you can. We've seen how Exchange Server 2007 builds on the setup experience of 2000 and 2003, providing for a simpler, more flexible, more intuitive experience. You can deploy using the graphical wizard, or you can use the command line, with or without an answer file. Server deployments can be fully delegated and fully automated. The product group has made significant improvements to the deployment and migration options that you have with Exchange Server 2007. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/exc-111 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft Official Curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP. You can choose to go and become a fully certified Systems Administrator, MSCA, or System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, here's Ian Brackenbury, TechNet Subscription Product Manager.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public newsgroups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.